Yeah, Shadow Prophecy is basically Dig Through Time. That card's insane.
Yeah, the first time I saw it, I thought, oh, this looks like a really cool instant speed Read the Bones. You know, just scry two, draw two, lose two. And that card's great. And it turns out a lot of times you're just looking at the top four and taking two, which is way better than scry two, draw two, and instant speed. It does feel like Dig Through Time. It's Dig Through insane. Grime? Like, what would the... Dig Through Grime? Dig That'd probably grime. Be a green one. Yeah.
No, it could be black. I don't know. Maybe. Well, you don't want to do Dig Through Grimes, though, because then you have to go through Grimes' discography. And then
Grave Dig Through Time? That would be like, look at a bunch of cards and put them in the graveyard. It'd be the opposite of Delve.
I would play that in Harvard.
And then...
Wasn't that just Grizzly Salvage at that point?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
That's fair. We'll just play Grizzly Salvage. That's really the... That's how we roll.
Okay, Dig Through Grime. We've done it. Dig Through Grime. Welcome to episode number 81 of the Memory Jar. As always, we're here to remember the cards, the decks, the people, and the stories that make Magic the game we love. I'm David Prestwood, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Christian Wright. Christian, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I'm excited to see this new Wizard-sponsored soccer team play in the MLS, or Major League Soccer, as it's more commonly known.
Is this a joke about the set being Dominaria United?
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. Like, your local team is DC United, and mine is Minnesota United FC. So I guess why not Dominaria United? Sure. Who's the goalie for Dominaria United? Like, Karn? It's Karn, right? Do you use a ball, yeah, or do they just, like, kick Urza's head around? I have a lot of questions.
All I know is they go for a 2-4-3-1 Gegenpress, and they really press high and try to facilitate passing towards Raul as the striker. So,
okay. That's a lot of information. I'm curious to which of our listeners will comprehend what you just said. Anyway, this is our Dominaria United show. We're going to talk about all the facts of Dominaria United, which is the new set, even though we're already in spoiler season for 100 other things. But before we get into that, let us crack open the memory jar. This week is a pretty nice one. This is Stalker Hag. Stalker Hag was an uncommon in Eventide. It is 3 hybrid Golgari mana. So you could pay, I guess, black, 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 or green, 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 or black, black, green, or black, green, green. I think that's all of them.
That's it. Yeah.
All right. So 3 hybrid Golgari mana for a 3/2 Hag with Swamp Walk and Forest Walk. That's pretty sweet, man. I gotta say, that's a lot of unblockable damage. And I guess if it's 2 basic land types, assuming your limited decks are 2 colors, this is unblockable against 70% of the decks. That's a lot of unblockable damage.
Yeah, normally, Shadowmoor Eventide was a little weird because it was more like monocolored, you know, a monocolored format, oddly enough, because all the hybrid mana just meant that it was easier to track just playing like at most 2 colors. The second color is a splash, right?
Okay.
From what I remember, I didn't do a whole lot of this. I've only read about it, so don't quote me too hard on this. Anyway, it broke people's brains is what I do remember. Like, I played Eventide pre-release and I could understand what I was doing.
I mean, I'm obviously talking about limited here. So even if, say, you had only monocolored decks in a set, then it's unblockable 40% of the time. You still just, like, main deck this, right?
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you're going to cast it on turn 3. And here's the real thing. When are we going to get Landwalk back?
Landwalk was kind of interesting. I like the idea of some of the weird landwalks. Like, I'm a big fan of, like, Desert Walk and non-basic landwalk and snow-covered landwalk and all that stuff that punishes people for playing things that aren't basics. I just looked. Landwalk was not a big thing in this block. The only other card in Eventide with landwalk was Cold-Eyed Selkie, which is it's a 1/1 island walk that when it deals combat damage to a player, you can draw that many cards. It's a rare and is a little more famous. It's printed in a bunch of commander sets. But... yeah, interesting that this just went with the double landwalk.
Yeah. I mean, I can't confirm this because I didn't do any research, but I'm 99% sure this is the only card with 2 landwalk abilities, and there might be, like, at most 1 other, if I had to guess. But usually when creatures got land walk, they only got one of them, right? They either only got swamp walk or only got plains walk or only got island walk. They didn't get multiple land walks. So I guess, you know, 2009, that's what Wizards thought was really stretching the color pie in Golgari.
I know there's at least one other card with two types. Rexxiol the Risen Deep, the like 5/8 Kraken from World Wake, has Island Walk and Swamp Walk, which those are the two colors of Rexxiol. I play this card in a commander deck, and I'm always afraid it's going to get stolen, and people are just going to bash me for five. Also, when it hits, you get to cast an instant or sorcery for free from their graveyard. So it's like very bad if it actually makes contact.
Oh, I actually, we missed one. There's one other card. It doesn't have it naturally, but I do want to talk about this card super quickly because it's terrible. There's another card that does technically have Forest Walk and Swamp Walk. It's Wormwood Treefolk from the Dark.
So yes, this is a
4/4. Yeah, 4/4 Treefolk, and you could pay green or black to give it either Forest Walk or Swamp Walk, but it dealt 2 damage to you if you did that.
No, I remember this. That was a big beater, but maybe not the thing that you wanted. Pretty good rate for the Dark, though. 5-mana 4/4 with no drawback.
Yeah. That's why it's on the reserve list. It's a $10 card.
Oh, God. All right. On that note, why don't we move on? Let's talk about Dominaria United, the newest of the main sets. I want to get into the set overview. And, you know, going back to Dominaria, the last time the Dominaria story was kind of cool to see the old characters come back, but it didn't really feel like they gave us a ton. It was only one set. And this time we went full 90s, early aughts magic. Do you want to do a quick story recap for the listeners here?
Yeah, before we get into the story, it's funny. We thought we did an episode on Dominaria, but it turns out that's before we did our show notes format. So all new to us.
Yeah, there were no fact shows back in the time of Dominaria so many years ago, which I feel like it's last year now. I feel old. Anyway,
it's a really good story. I do recommend you read it. I'll try to go as quickly as possible, give you the cliff notes. So we start off with Karn excavating artifacts. We know he's trying to kill the Phyrexians. That's been alluded to in previous story. He does find it, but he also finds the Phyrexians. He attempts to stop them without backup, which turns into him getting stuck in the Caves of Kolios for a year, and Sheldred and Rona escaping. Ajani does manage to find and free Karn, and then they go to try to warn Jorah, Teferi, and other planeswalkers about the threat facing Dominaria. They happen to do this when they run into them in a peace negotiation between the Nalish and the Keldons. There's a person there named Sten, who's a mediator from Argive, and he's paranoid once he hears that Phyrexians are out and about, their sleeper agents everywhere. So a bunch of Keldon and Banalish get out of their disguises and try to kill everyone, and everyone escapes.
Yeah, this is really, really cool. There's a lot of body horror in these stories, especially how the sleeper agents who don't know they're sleeper agents just like explode into these horrifying machines or like a million bugs or whatever. So yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot. It's good. We're getting back to like classic body horror magic. It's fantastic. Just to speed up, because this is a lot of story I'm trying to pack into one. Basically, this Planeswalker group, Planeswalks to New Argive, they have a cool little like bottle episode in a tower in New Argive. Turns out Sten was a sleeper agent all along. They kill him. They realize that New Argive is all Phyrexian sleeper agents. The Planeswalkers all try to warn the rest of Dominaria. Jodah goes to Yavimaya. Ajani and Jaya run into Airtai. And we find out Airtai has totally turned the leader of the Benelish into a sleeper agent. Not great. Ends on a cliffhanger. It all eventually culminates in a big fight at the Mana Rig and Keld. The Phyrexians all attack. Joyra, who is turning the Mana Rig into a weapon, manages to man it and fight back. But right before Karn uses the Golgothian Silex to destroy all the Phyrexians, we find out that Ajani, this whole time, was a sleeper agent.
And no, Ajani!
Destroys the Silex. I know! Destroys the Silex, kills Jaya, and now Sheldred takes Karn away. Teferi realizes that, well, the only way we're going to stop the Phyrexians is we have to go back in time. And with Saheeli's help...
Back in time. Going back in time. Yeah, you get it.
Yep. Basically, with Saheeli's help, he goes back in time to the Brothers' War, which is the next set.
Yeah, so it'll be fascinating to see how that all turns out. A lot of things happen in the story. It's really cool. You should read it. The poor Johnny did not know he was a sleeper agent, and he tried to like stop himself from bursting into a Phyrexian, but he couldn't. I think the reason that going a little deeper on the story on this one was important is that the cards are really evocative of this story, and it helps to understand, like, why is the Weatherlight now a Phyrexian ship and all of these things. So, yeah, definitely worth reading those main stories and even the side stories. But let's get into the nuts and bolts a little bit. Let's talk mechanics. We have the most classic of Dominarian mechanics, Christian. Kicker is back.
Yeah. Isn't everything Kicker, though?
Yeah, basically everything's Kicker, but Kicker is also Kicker, and we like Kicker. So a lot of off-color Kicker in this set makes me think of, like, Invasion block cards where, you know, you get to splash for your off-color Kickers. And Kicker, I'm sure our listeners know, but it's just an extra amount you can pay when casting a spell that creates an additional result or a better result than if you had just cast it without Kicker. We also have one other returning mechanic. Christian, do you want to talk about Domain?
Yeah, so Domain is kind of like a more of a reminder text than anything. It's cards do something that scales up based on the number of basic land types you control. Like Tribal Flames is a classic Domain card, for example. It's one in red for an instant, and it deals X damage to any target where X is the number of basic land types you control. So if you control three, it deals three. If you control all five basic land types, it deals five. It's just really powerful now that they've printed Triomes. It's really easy to turn on Domain. And we're going to see this have much more of an impact in older formats like Modern and Pioneer and Legacy than necessarily Standard. Because it's a little harder to pull that off in Standard when you don't have true dual lands. You got to play bad lands to, not the card bad lands, but lands that are not good to enable Domain.
Yeah, and with rotation, we only have some of the Triumphs in Standard. And so, you know, it'd be nice to see some kind of zoo deck with Domain, but it seems like that's probably not going to happen. Just a reminder on Domain that though they are basic lands, Wastes is not actually a basic land type. It's just the name of the untyped basic land. So you only get to get up to five with your Domain. We also have some new mechanics. The first one is called Enlist. When you attack with a creature with Enlist, you can tap another non-attacking creature that does not have Summoning Sickness, and it will functionally add its power to the first creature's power, the creature that has Enlist. So if you have a 1/3 Vigilance with Enlist and you attack with it, you can tap your 4/4, and then it will basically be attacking as a 5/3 Vigilance. It's kind of like a fixed banding on attacks because you are saying the Enlist creature is the one that's going to take all of this damage, and it's going to deal all of the damage to creatures as it normally would. It's like incredibly clunky. And whatever you're using the term Summoning Sickness in italics, the mechanic is kind of a lot. but there are some new differences here. I like that the creature just doesn't have to have Summoning Sickness. So that means if you play a creature with haste, or you have a defender, or you have a creature locked down under a pacifism effect, you can still tap all of those to add their power to the Enlist creature. Not that I think this is going to be some kind of constructed staple, but it's just kind of, I just think it's neat.
Yeah, I think they're trying to get Enlist to make it more of a limited, you know, combat mechanic that they can use in the future. I do think their attempt to balance it is a little clunky. Like, I wonder how much better it is if you could use a creature that's summoning sick, right? Like,
That would seem very powerful, and I thought the same thing. It must have just been a little overwhelming. I'm sure they considered that.
Yeah. Another new twist on returning mechanics. So sagas are back, but now sagas are kind of deciduous. Like, we've seen them a lot, so it's not surprising or impactful that they're returning. It makes sense, too. We're talking about Dominaria. There's a lot of old history and old stories that get told through cards. But the new twist is called Read Ahead. When you play a saga in Dominaria United, you can choose which chapter to start with. Let's give you an example of what we mean. I'm going to read The Phasing of Zalfir. It's 2 blue-blue for an enchantment saga. Has Read Ahead, so you choose a chapter and start with that many lore counters. Add one after your draw step. Skip chapters don't trigger. Sacrifice after the third chapter. The first two chapters in The Phasing of Zalfir are another target non-land permanent phases out. It can't phase in as long as you control The Phasing of Zalfir. And then the third chapter is Destroy All Creatures. For each creature destroyed this way, its controller creates a 2/2 black Phyrexian creature token. So this is perfect, right? Like, why would you want to skip one or both of the first chapters in this?
Yeah, I mean, if you just want the wrath and turn everything into a 2-2, you can just say it enters on number 3. It's worth noting that when you read ahead, you actually choose to read ahead as the saga enters the battlefield, and that choice or putting the counters on it can't be responded to. So if your opponent wants to counter it, for example, they have to do it while it's on the stack. You don't have to say, yes, when it enters, I'm going to read ahead to chapter 3. The other new mechanic we have, which they said will be an evergreen mechanic, are stun counters. This turns the freeze mechanic that has never actually been called that, but that's what players often call it, which means a permanent can't untap until its controller's next untap phase, into an evergreen mechanic that's dealt with counters. It helps with these memory issues where it's like, okay, so you just put a counter on the thing, and then instead of untapping it, you remove the counter, which is something that a lot of people would do anyway. They say, oh yeah, I'm just going to like put something on this so I remember it doesn't untap, and then I'll remove that. This is actually a little different than the taps but doesn't untap during the next untap step thing, because stun counters say if it would untap, you remove a stun counter instead. So there's no more, oh, I can untap my thing at instant speed with a different thing and then eat your attacker or whatever it may be. Instead, you would just remove a stun counter.
Yeah, it's pretty elegant. I never thought about this as a solution to that. And it allows them to do things like, if you want to use untapping as a cost, for example, mm-hmm. say it's Devoted Druid, instead of untapping it, it just removes a stun counter. So
yep.
That's pretty elegant. And now it allows them to print cards that freeze for longer than just one turn.
Yeah, there's a comment in this set that puts 3 stun counters on a creature and taps it. And so it's just not going to untap. Instead of the next 3 turns, the next 3 times it tries to untap. One interesting rules note, if you do have to untap something as a cost and that thing has a stun counter on it, instead of untapping it, you remove the stun counter, but the cost will still be considered paid. So that's still considered untapping the creature. So, you know, if you have one of the old equipment that has an untap symbol on it, that's how it works.
It's pretty great. Oops, pretty
good. Yeah.
It's pretty great. So, we have completed again. We'll just be super quick about it. This is a mega cycle across multiple sets where we've taken a planeswalker in each color and they're now Phyrexian. This time, it's a Johnny. He's completed. We're sorry, y'all. He's now Phyrexian.
Yep. And in the cost of completed planeswalkers, there is a hybrid Phyrexian mana. So in a Johnny's case, it's a hybrid green-white mana. So you can either pay green or white or 2 life. Completed means if you pay the 2 life, then it comes in with 2 fewer loyalty counters. So in a Johnny's case, he's a 3 mana 2 loyalty planeswalker or a 4 mana 4 loyalty planeswalker. Much better on 4.
The last new one we have, which is a preview mechanic. Whoa, crazy. Ooh,
I love it when they do this.
Yeah, it's Power Stone tokens. So Power Stone tokens are tokens that are created by Karn and the Mana Rig. Power Stone token is an artifact that has tap, add 1 colorless, not generic, specifically colorless mana. This mana can't be spent to cast a non-artifact spell.
Yeah, these are really cool. Power Stone is a new predefined token like clues or food or treasure. When something says a Power Stone token, it just refers to this particular thing. And we know this is a preview mechanic, first of all, because when we saw Karn Living Legacy and he made these Power Stone tokens, it was like, that's really weird. And then they were also on this card, the Mana Ring from the Commander set. I'm like, that's weird. What are these for? Well, Mark Rosewater wrote in the second episode of his Dominaria United We Stand articles that we're going to see Power Stone tokens in the Brothers War. So they made this a throw ahead. Well, I guess since that set takes place in the past, it's a throwback. But, you know, it's a preview mechanic for a set that's back in time. And I'm going to stop saying that now. I will note that the cards we've seen so far both make Power Stone tokens that enter tapped. But that is actually not a native part of the token. So there may be things that make them untapped in the Brothers War, we'll have to see. These are interesting because they can't be spent to cast non-artifact spells, but you can use them for like one of the abilities on the Karn, or like I have used them in Limited for activating the abilities of my walls. So they do have a lot of uses.
Here's a bigger question. Is this going to be like food, where there's just a lot of random activated abilities where you sacrifice Power Stones and everything poops out Power Stone tokens? And now you're like, wow, this is pretty miserable. Or is this going to be more like clues, where it's just like, oh yeah, I just happened to make Power Stone tokens and look, I've ramped. This is crazy.
I can see this being parasitic enough, since they're going as far as throwing it ahead, where there are things where they have abilities that can maybe only be activated by Power Stone tokens. Mm-hmm. So we will have to see. So yeah, a lot of new mechanics. Why don't we talk about some of the signature reprints that have old mechanics on them? We got Liliana of the Veil. Yeah, ooh, Liliana of the Veil is back in a standard legal set. It's wild. I mean,
yeah,
for many years was a modern staple. Jund them out. And this was originally going to be reprinted in Magic 2015, but it got pulled from that set. So they've thought about putting it in standard before, and now they've given it to us here. How do you feel about this being reprinted?
Before we get into that, I just want to read the text in case you're not familiar with Liliana Veil.
Smart. Yeah. Got ahead of myself.
I know. We're magic boomers, so we know Liliana the Veil. We've memorized her. So it's one black for a Liliana Planeswalker. She starts with 3 loyalty. Her plus ability is +1. Each player discards a card. Her minus ability is -2. Target player sacrifices a creature. And her ultimate is -6. Separate all permanent target player controls into 2 piles. That player sacrifices all permanents in the pile of their choice. It's pretty backbreaking. And it's just a really powerful Planeswalker. Yeah, she's going to be terrible in standard. That's my prediction. Mm. She's going to be terrible in standard. Although there's a lot of good mono black decks right out now. So I'm meaning Crow here talking about that. But no, she's much better in Eternal formats where you can easily break that parity.
Yeah, you do need to be able to discard things for value to really get your kind of full value here. And Cult Conscript is a creature in this set that comes back, and there's probably some other ones. I will just note for you Arena players, if your opponent has this card and they do the -6, they do the ultimate, you're probably going to lose. But a surefire way to lose is to click on the pile of the cards you want to save, because that's what you would think you would do. But no, read it very carefully. It says you sacrifice all permanents in the pile of your choice. So if you select the pile, that's what you sacrifice. And I yes, that includes land.
Tilt on it. Yeah. No, someone's going to tilt off on that for sure. Like, they're going to be like, I clicked my pile with creatures and now I only have lands. What's up with that?
I am sure it has already happened. So yes. I went back and read some of the articles from around Magic 2015 where they were thinking about reprinting this. And it turns out the original version of Siege Rhino had the what we call the dodecapod text, which is that if a spell or ability that the opponent controls would cause you to discard it, you put it into play instead. And it was like that because it was a way to combat Liliana of the Veil. We don't really have... I'm just calling this the dodecapod effect. We don't have a name for this. We don't have it in the Magic Dictionary, but we should come up with one. That's a note for later. There are kind of two kinds of this effect. There's the one that puts it into play, or the original version, actually. This originated with Psychic Purge in Legends, which just does something different if you're forced to discard the card. So Psychic Purge was a blue sorcery that dealt a damage to any target. Stick me with me here. That's super weird. But if somebody made you discard it, they would lose 5 life. So it's like a lava axe if they make you discard cards. Anyway, the moral of the story is given that the first printing got Loxodon Smiter, which had that effect that put it into play and returned to Ravnica. And the almost second printing almost got this weird version of Siege Rhino that put it into play. Do you think we get a hate card for Liliana in the next set or two?
Oh, yeah. I think we see one in either the Brothers War or the Avengers in-game Magic version in the spring. But yeah, they have to have something like this because there has to be some sort of pressure valve. She was not very good in standard in Innistrad. Like, she was played briefly and then kind of fell by the wayside. And I don't know if they want to see that happen again.
I guess we will see. She's already been pretty gross with Invoke Despair, so...
I'm already going to tell you, I think we should call it the dodecapod effect. Just call it the dodecapod effect. Or we could say it's the guerrilla tactics effect.
Also good. Well, we'll come up with that. We'll add it to the Magic Card Dictionary.
Yeah. Painlands are back. We're getting 6, not 5. So we're getting an uneven cycle in Dominaria United. We're getting the remaining 4 in Brothers War. These were originally printed in Ice Age, and the enemy ones were then printed as to fill the gap in Apocalypse. They're lands that can tap for 1 of 2 colors of mana. The land deals 1 damage to you if you do so, or you can tap to add 1 colorless mana to your mana pool.
We have 3 allied and 3 enemies here, and it's really weird. Ethan Fleischer, Magic Designer, did a great thread on Twitter in which he laid out the reason for the 6. He said that they wanted to add the original allied pain lands to Pioneer. Since many of the place names were unique to Dominaria, the place to do it was over Dominaria United and the Brothers War. So he said, all right, we'll do the allied ones, because those aren't in Pioneer yet, and then we'll do the enemy ones that are already in Pioneer in the Brothers War. The problem was they look through the lore and some of the places, specifically Adarkar Wastes, Carplusan Forest, and then Yavimaya Coast, did not exist during the time of the Brothers' War. And so they said, oh, well, I guess we have to put those in Dominaria United. And then they added Sulphur Springs and Caves of Koilos to balance the colors. Apparently later the play design team requested they add Shivan Reef for standard mana base reasons. So we're at 6 here and then 4 in the next set. I just love that the lore is the reason where they're like, no, we can't. There was no Yavimaya during the time of the Brothers' War. We can't have the Yavimaya Coast. It would be meaningless.
Yeah, it's pretty weird, but I'm glad that was the justification. That's probably a first when it comes to reprinting a cycle of evergreen reprintable cards. So I'm glad we're getting them for older formats. Before we get into whether you like them for play or not, let's talk about Sulphur Springs. It has a great homage in the art.
Yeah, so the original Sulphur Springs, this is the red-black Painland from Ice Age, had this like demon chilling in a sulfurous spring like it was a hot tub, just arms up, you know, leaning back, enjoying themselves. And then the main art for Dominaria United has the skull of a demon sitting on the edge of a sulfurous spring. Like, the flavor text is, everything is flammable in the Burning Isles, even the mana itself. So our demon friend sat in there just a little too long. What an incredible throwback.
Yes, I love it. Glad they could reference the old Phil Foglio art. Probably the best art in the set, in my opinion, but let's not go too far. So do you like it? Do you think they're going to get a lot of play? Or
I guess so. People do need mana bases for their standard decks. It's weird and limited that they don't have the basic land types in a domain set. Like, I would rather just have the common duels every time, even though they enter tapped, than one of these in a limited deck. I get that we need these for Pioneer, and so I'm really glad that they're doing that.
I wonder if we're going to get another round of those colorless matters cards, like Thought Not Seer, Eldrazi Displacer, that type of stuff. We're going to get those again, because I could see that being tied into Phyrexia a little bit.
I hope so. I loved the colorless matters thing in Oath of the Gatewatch. I may be the only one, but you know, I have a Rune of the Hidden Realm commander deck that flickers, and I play the three pain lands in that deck, though I play them in almost no other commander decks, because Eldrazi Displacer needs colorless mana to activate, and these tap for colorless mana. So seems like a good thing to throw in there. We've got Lightning Strike back at common. One in a red for an instant, deals 3 to any target. This was common back in Theros in Magic 2015, and then we had it in Ixalan and Magic 2019, but they bumped it up to uncommon. So nice to see it back in standard. This will definitely do some work.
Yeah, I don't like it a common for draft reasons. I've already died to it today. Not cool.
It does go face. Not
cool. We're getting a cool old reprint. Impulse is finally back in standard since Visions in 1997. First time we have a main set printing or a standard set printing for Impulse.
Impulse is one in a blue for an instant, and you look at the top 4 cards of your library, put one into your hand and the rest on the bottom in any order. We usually get Anticipate or similar effects, which are the same thing, except you look at the top 3, or if you look at more, it's more expensive. This was originally a really important component of Worlds decks in the late 90s. It was generally, I don't think, a 4 of, but it was an important thing to dig for your combo pieces. It's like still played in Legacy Show and Tell to dig for your pieces. I don't know if it'll be a 4 of now, but like, there's got to be standard decks that want this, right? Like, Blue-White Control probably wants this card.
Yeah, I think if there's a Blue-White Control deck, or even like a Prowess deck, this is still really good. What, 2 mana, dig 4 cards, find the card you want. And it's unconditional, too, which is good. You know, like, it's not like Inventor's Impulse, or even Ancient Stirrings, where it does dig deep but only finds certain types of cards. Like, this will definitely see play. I'm glad we have our old versions right here, ready to play. So
you gotta have the Visions versions if you can't get the $65 foil FNM version from 2001. I want to talk about one more, and that's Dragon Whelp. This is originally a card from Alpha, 2 red for a 2/3 dragon. It has flying, and it has a weird fire breathing ability. You pay red and it gets +1/+0 until end of turn, but if the ability has been activated 4 or more times this turn, you sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. And I love when they do this. They could have just printed a 2/3 flying dragon with fire breathing, but instead they chose to reprint this specific card with this weird sacrifice text they would just never print today for any reason, because it's like so much extra. But as long as we're putting all the text on cards, why not do some of the old weird ones? This one's great. Yes. I love it.
Yeah, it's not the old art. The old Amy Weber art is classic. But yeah, it's just nice to see. You know, it's a nice throwback. You know, it's very like, it's from Alpha Beta Unlimited. So of course it has to be in Dominaria United. It's interesting too, because the last time we saw this was like 12 years ago in Magic 2010.
This also strikes a great balance, where I feel like most cards from Alpha are either super busted or unplayable. And this one's just is still very playable, at least in Limited. Now, it's like a fine card. Look at that.
Yeah. Well, it's either that or Sarah Angel, so.
Ooh, yeah. We have had Sarah Angel. That was in the last Dominaria set. Maybe every time we go to Dominaria, they give us one classic flyer. Mahamadi Jin next.
Yeah, before we go on to Forced Obsolescence, it is nice that there are some cards that we get to keep in Standard still that are just classic. Things like Essence Scatter, Negate, Thrill of Possibility. They're all reprinted in Dominaria United, but it's good to have them around. They serve a good purpose for Standard, and we don't have to see the umpteenth version of these done for the set mechanic. We just get the tried and true staples.
Absolutely. Well, you teased Forced Obsolescence, so let's get here. This is not about which cards are strictly better. It's about which cards make older cards completely obsolete. So new cards that completely replace old cards, which means it has to be the same color, the same cost or cheaper, and of the same or better effect. So the example we always give is Colossal Dreadmaw, a 4GG 6/6 trample, obsoleted Crawworm, which was a 4GG 6/4. Crawworm's obsolete. There's no reason to play it anymore. Now we're also only talking about cards that newly make old cards obsolete. So Play with Fire from Midnight Hunt was red to deal 2 to a target and scry 1 if you chose a player. Well, we didn't talk about that obsoleting Shock, even though that's red to deal 2 to a target. Yeah, it's obviously better, but Shock was already obsolete. Lightning Bolt is red to deal 3. It's a better card. So when Shock was first printed, it was already obsolete.
Yeah, and we're not going to, you know, there might be some corner cases where like having a certain creature type matters, or turning presumably negative effects like losing life into a positive are good, but those are the tiniest corner cases. We're not looking at those. We're literally looking at cards that completely make older cards redundant. With that, let's start with our first one.
All right. I spent a lot of time on this. I hope you guys like it. The first one's Automatic Librarian. This is 3 mana for a 3/2 artifact creature construct. When it enters the battlefield, you scry 2. This makes obsolete Chrome Cat, which we just got in Streets of New Capenna, which is the same card, except you only get to scry 1.
Coral Colony obsoletes Doorkeeper. So Coral Colony is a 1 and a blue for a 1/4 wall, obviously has Defender, and has 1 blue and tap. Target player mills X cards, or X is the number of creatures you control with Defender. This obsoletes Doorkeeper because it costs 1 less to activate and has 1 more power than our classic Return to Ravnica buddy.
Surprised to see something just house Doorkeeper completely. Crystal Grotto is a land. When it enters the battlefield, you scry 1. It taps for a colorless, and you can pay 1 and tap to add a mana of any color. This obsoletes Jalfirin Void from Dominaria, which was a land that when it enters, you scry 1, and you could just tap for colorless. That was uncommon, too, and this is just common. So, yeah, really took that one to town.
Furious Bellow, which is 1 red for an instant. Card creature gets +3/+0 and gains first strike until end of turn, scry 1. This obsoletes Sure Strike, which has been printed a bunch. We last saw it in Innistrad Crimson Vow. It doesn't have scry 1 on it. So Furious Bellow, replacing Sure Strike for now and forever. We're always going to scry 1 with it. Sounds great.
Yeah, I'm here for it. I like Sure Strike already. So Joined Forces, 2 and a white for an instant. Untap up to 2 target creatures. They each get +2/+2 until end of turn. This obsoletes Dauntless Onslaught from Theros, which is the same thing except you don't untap the creatures. That was a heroic enabler. This is just like wildly better.
I got blown out by it earlier, too. So next we have Lalinor Green Widow. Lalinor Green Widow is 2 and a green for a 4/3 spider. Obviously has reach and trample. Has domain 7 green. Returned Lalinor Green Widow from your graveyard to the battlefield. Tap. It gains if this permanent will leave the battlefield, exile instead of putting it anywhere else. This ability costs 1 less to activate for each basic land type among lands you control. It obsoletes Knotvald Recluse, which was printed in Kaldheim. And it basically, Knotvald Recluse doesn't have all the cool text on it, nor trample. It's just a 4/2 reacher. It's pretty boring.
Phyrexian Missionary, 1 and a white for a 2/3 Phyrexian Human Cleric. It has lifelink, and it also has kicker for 1 and a black. And when it enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. This is another just, what a beating. This obsoletes Daybreak Chaplain from originally core set 2019, which is 1 and a white for a 1/3 lifelink. That's it. Phyrexian Missionary is awesome, by the way. It's just like insanely awesome. It's even if you just play it for one and a white, it's a 2/3 lifelink. That's crazy.
Next, we have Pilfer. Pilfer is one in a black for a sorcery. Target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-land card from it. That player discards that card. It also has Tiny Bones in the art, so in the running for best art in the set, just because we all love Tiny Bones. This obsoletes Lay Bare the Heart. Lay Bare the Heart was printed in Amaket, and it is basically the same thing, except it didn't allow you to choose a legendary card. You can only choose non-legendary, non-land cards from it. Yeah, so Pilfer also has the neat distinction of being the only unrestricted 2-mana discard spell. It's Thoughtseize for +1 mana and 3 less life. It, unlike cards like Hymn to Torak, where your opponent randomly discards 2 cards, Pilfer actually is the only one that allows you to choose it without any restrictions at 2 mana.
Yeah, pretty wild that we've had a lot of this effect that are always more limited, and this one just says non-land. Normally you have to pay 3 mana for that. Stall for Time is 2 and a white for an instant. You tapped up to 2 target creatures and draw a card. It also has Kicker for 1 and a blue, and if the spell is kicked, you put a stun counter on each of those creatures. This makes obsolete Repel the Darkness from Rise of the Eldrazi, which just taps up to 2 target creatures and draws you a card. So the Kicker really does the job here.
Kicker. Hell of a mechanic. Next, we have Tail Swipe. Tail Swipe is 1 green for an instant. Choose target creature you control and target creature you don't control. If you cast the spell during your main phase, the creature you control gets +1/+1 until end of turn, and then those creatures fight each other. This obsoletes Mutant's Prey, which was originally printed in Dragon's Maze. I forgot this was card existed, so I'm going to have to read it. Forgive me. Mutant's Prey is basically the same thing, except the only creature you can choose to control to fight has to already have a +1/+1 counter on it.
Is it almost the same thing? It's just a fight.
It's a fight that's clearly...
It's a 1-mana instant speed fight, right? I think that's the only... And there's no other 1-mana instant speed fight, I don't think.
I tried to sugarcoat this. Look, it's a bad card. It's Dragon's Maze. You have to assume it's bad. Don't worry about it. Tail Swipe is the 1-mana instant fight card we've always wanted.
That is true. All right, next is Tattered Apparition. 3 and a black for a 2/2 shade with flying. You can pay 1 and a black to give it +1/+1 until end of turn. This makes obsolete Nightwing Shade from Magic 2011, which is the same card, but it costs 1 more mana.
Rip. Lastly, we're going to talk about Twinferno. Twinferno is 1 in a red for an instant. You choose one. When you cast your next instant or sorcery spell this turn, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy, or target creature you control gains double strike until end of turn. I like to read the flavor text on this because it's great. More fire, Jaya asked. More fire, Johto agreed. This obsoletes Double Cast, which is just the first half of that modal spell. It's also a sorcery. It's not a cool instant, so.
Yeah, and it costs red instead of 1 and a red. Like, way harder to cast. I did want to mention here Soaring Drake. So it's not that it obsoletes Windrake, because Windrake was obsolete a long time ago. But Soaring Drake is 2 and a blue for a 2/3 flyer. We've already seen this card one time, but it was only in the like Planeswalker decks from Throne of Eldraine. It was called Oko's Accomplices. But this is how far we've come. Windrake is now just completely outclassed in all forms. It's a 2/3. It's a 2/3 flyer for 3 mana. That seems crazy.
Yeah. And this is also actual Drake. It's not some shoehorned in lore theme card. Mm-hmm. No, actually an honest to goodness Drake beefed up between the time Windrake started. So rest in peace.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to some of the detailed facts, creature types, tokens, and so on. There are actually no new creature types in the set, no old creature errata, and no oracle changes or rules changes of consequence, so we can skip all that. But there are some interesting and notable type combinations. The first one I want to mention is Human Core Soldier on Argivian Phalanx. This is the first ever Human Core, and I thought this was going to be like in the Dungeons & Dragons sets where they had a human elf, and that was their way of doing a half elf. But no, it's not a half-human, half-core. There are just multiple creatures on the card that are soldiers, and they make up the phalanx. So there's like a human and a couple of core. Still cool.
It's pretty clever. Haven't seen that before, but I'm glad we're venturing into that territory. We finally have a nightmare. It's only interesting because it's Braids. So Braids is no longer human. She's gone too crazy. Now she's just a nightmare consuming our dreams and desires. So awesome. Good job, Braids.
I do love nightmares. Speaking of them, we have a nightmare wall. Gibbering Barricade is the first one of those. And if you look at the art and think about what a gibbering barricade would be, yeah, the story checks out. That's a nightmare wall.
We have our first core berserker. Balduvian Berserker is a core. who berserks. Good job, Core. Yeah. You're now angry.
Here's a good one for you. Shivan Devastator, the X and a red mythic, is our first Dragon Hydra, finally a combo of these two iconic creature types. It was probably due, given the number of plant Hydras that we've had. Like, give us the Dragon Hydra.
Dragon Hydra. Yeah, as Hydras ought to be, Dragon Hydras. We have our first Vyashina Warlock, which is really surprising because you think the Vyashina would have had a Warlock by now, but no. No, it took him 25, 30 years before we got our first Vyashina Warlock. It's Ribbus of the Claw. So he's a legendary creature, but he's a Vyashina Warlock. So good job. Good job in the representation, Vyashinos.
Yeah. And like Vyashinos, he cares about dragons, even though there are very few in this set. Although we've already talked about two of them, so maybe that's not a very good point. I'll move on. Solkanar the Tainted is our first ever elemental demon, which makes a lot of sense with his backstory as a former forest-dwelling Maro sorcerer who was turned by Dehada, I think? Yeah, anyway.
Maybe?
Sure. Yeah, and we have a new Solkanar. Can I just say that Solkanar the Swamp King, one of my favorite cards from Legends back in the day. I hope I still have my Legends copy.
It's $160, so...
Oh my god.
So, we'll just talk about some quick Phyrexian firsts, because now that Phyrexian is an actual creature type, they now are pinning it on a bunch of stuff. We have a Phyrexian Berserker in Balduvian Atrocity. We have a Phyrexian Horse with Phyrexian Warhorse.
That's an obvious one.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? We have Phyrexian Kavu, which I didn't think would happen. But what's the Phyrexian Kavu?
That's a Defiler of Instinct, one of the Defiler cycle that we won't talk about here, but are pretty intense. We have a Phyrexian Core Cleric. Elas Ilkor Sadistic Pilgrim is the first Phyrexian core of any kind, and the art on that is awesome and scary.
Very awesome.
We also have a Phyrexian Merfolk Wizard in Vohar Vidalion Desecrator. So there is a Phyrexian Merfolk.
We have, I think, the only cool, unique thing in colors is we finally have an Elf Archer in red.
Yeah, I have a feeling we'll be talking about that one later in the Secret Reach category. Let's talk about the new tokens in this set. New bird dropped. The rare, the Raven Man, makes 1/1 black flying birds that can't block. So that's pretty hot. That's kind of wild. I believe that is our first black bird token.
Phyrexians not only are new creature types, but we have a 2/2 Phyrexian token thanks to Phasing of Zalfir. So great representation there.
Yeah, I like how you talked about that earlier. That's just synergy, podcast synergy. We have a new elemental token made by Lagomos, Hand of Hatred. It is a 2/1 Trample Haste in red.
Jaya saw the Monastery Mentors and said, you know what? I need some of those. So now we have red 1/1 Prowess Monks. Good on them.
Ugh. I love that. I have not gotten to play with Jaya Fiery Negotiator yet, but I'm going to make so many monks. Here's a classic one for you. Yosha Declares War makes an Ornithopter, which is a 0/2 flying artifact creature Thopter. It just doesn't, technically cost zero because it doesn't have a mana cost on it, but it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. And lastly, as we mentioned before, Power Stones, you know, in the class of clues, food, blood, all that jazz, we have Power Stones, which we talked about earlier.
All right, let's do a quick roundup of counters. Besides stun counters, there are only two real special counters in the whole set. The first is Joyra Ageless Innovator. She makes Ingenuity counters. She is blue-red for a 2/3 legendary human artificer. You can tap her to put two Ingenuity counters on her, and then you may put an artifact card with mana value X or less from your hand onto the battlefield, where X is the number of Ingenuity counters on Joyra. You gotta think this is a plant for the next set, because there's nothing in the set that cares about that or putting artifacts into play. Also, when I was thinking about this, I realized there's no card that's just named Ingenuity.
Mm-hmm.
So let's make the card. What does that card do? It sounds like a cheap draw spell to me. And here's my proposal.
Mm-hmm.
Ingenuity is an instant. For 1U, it's scry 1, draw a card, which is not good, but it has Metalcraft, draw a card. So it could be scry 1, draw 2 for 2 mana.
Okay. I like that. I think you could also do something like another background, like, or an enchantment, just Ingenuity, like an aura. And it's sort of like Curiosity, except it scries instead of draws. So,
Interesting. Okay, I could see that.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're card designers now.
Yeah. Don't hire us, though. We like our jobs.
You can't afford me, Wizards.
Yeah, you can afford me, though. Next, we have Phyresis counters. So this is on Rest in Peace, our good friend, Weatherlight completed. You're a cool Weatherlight. Now you're a Phyrexian. We have to kill you. It's unique. We have never seen Phyresis counters, although Phyresis has been talked about a lot in Magic history. It's basically the act of turning something into a Phyrexian. So very appropriate. So I'm going to read Weatherlight completed. One, because we need to pay respects to our dear buddy, the Weatherlight. Two, because friend of the podcast, friend of the hosts, Alex Smith, who works at Wizards of the Coast, we found out actually got to design this card as a hole filling exercise, or at least the initial design. It was iterated on since then. So congratulations, Alex. You have another card in your back pocket that you designed. Weatherlight Completed is too generic for a legendary artifact vehicle, has flying. As long as Weatherlight Completed has four or more Phyresis counters on it, it's a Phyrexian creature in addition to its other types. Whenever a creature you control dies, put a Phyresis counter on Weatherlight Completed, then draw a card that has seven or more Phyresis counters on it. If it doesn't, scry one. And it's a 5/5 when you do, quote-unquote, crew it.
Yeah, there's no actual crew cost, so you have to have all the creatures die to make this happen. I played against this at the pre-release, and my opponent got four counters on it and turned it into a horrifying 5/5 flyer, and then I bounced it and won. So there are some downsides to the uncrewable vehicle. We'll just note there are a couple of other counters in the set we've seen before. A Johnny Sleeper Agent has an ultimate that is -6. You get an emblem with whenever you cast a creature or planeswalker spell, target opponent gets two poison counters. So we know what poison counters are. Just to tie this into Weatherlight Completed, and another good way to give someone poison counters is to cast Phyresis on one of your creatures, which is an enchantment that gives your creature infect, which then gives them poison counters. So we're tying it all together. It's all getting wrapped up. I also wanted to mention Evolved Sleeper, which is a black rare, single black for a 1/1 human, and you can pay a mana to make it a human cleric that's a 2/2, pay one and a black to, if it is a cleric, put a Death Touch counter on it and it becomes a Phyrexian human cleric that's a 3/3, and then you can pay one black if it's a Phyrexian to put a counter on it and then you draw a card and lose a life. So it's like a mono black version of this Figure of Destiny type card where you're leveling it up. It's worth noting because there's a Death Touch counter here, and despite seeing them a lot in recent sets, this is the only ability counter in this entire set. So kind of surprising that they just went with Uno.
It's also easy to do when it's just one. You just put a piece of paper on it and call it a day, right? So
just a whole 8 by 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. You're like, yeah, it's a death
just right.
It's huge.
Death touch.
Love it. Let's talk about the special frames. As always, there are a lot of them. Start with the borderless alternate art on Planeswalkers of Painlands. I'll go first here. I think these are always hot. Even when the regular art is better, the borderless are just very nice.
Yeah, and the alt arts on these are all really good. They also have some classic Magic arts they got for some of these, and it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. 10 out of 10. What about the Showcase Stained Glass versions? How do you feel about those?
I love these. It's like a nuclear version of the stained glass planeswalkers from War of the Spark that all have very different art, and it just seems very appropriate for Dominaria. I think these are some of the best showcase cards we've had in a while.
Yeah, I love them too. They all make all the legends seem very classic, in which most of them are, so it kind of really fits the theme.
How do you feel about the Phyrexian cards? We've got a couple cards in Phyrexian again in this set, in a Johnny Sleeper Agent and Shieldred, the Apocalypse.
Sure.
Yeah, that okay. Not really for me either. I did open a Shieldred at the pre-release and it was cool, but I felt bad explaining to my round one opponent who had played very little Magic what the card actually did. I will say I'm a little annoyed at the Ajani. So all of the other Phyrexian cards, from the original Elish Norn Judge promo to the Secret Lair to the ones we've had recently, have the power and toughness written not in the normal font, but in this kind of scrawly script. And the Tameo that was completed had the loyalty counters and the number on the loyalty abilities written in the same script, but Ajani doesn't. Ajani's is just the regular font. And that makes me crazy. Not cool. Like, just, yeah, little design inconsistency.
How do you feel about extended art cards in the set?
Always yes. Always yes.
Yeah.
Here for it.
Best versions. They're the best version of cards. Nothing new. You know, just fantastic.
Full art basics in this set, the stained glass 5 lands.
Oh, they're hot. They're beautiful. Just, I will say, I feel like they had some duds when they were rolling these out after the Theros Beyond Death basics. But now they're all good. Like, the new Capenna ones are really good. these are really good. The Neon Dynasty ones are really good. So yeah, they're just figuring out what works.
Yeah, I really like the Theros Beyond Death ones, the Constellation lands. The Kamigawa Woodblock ones I think are better than these, but the Stained Glass ones, they brought in Magali for some great art, and these are the best we've had in a while. Like, I think some of the other ones we've had, like, half of the lands are pretty good. Like, I liked about half of the new Capenna ones. These are really excellent. I could see these going in a lot of very fancy commander decks.
Fancy boys.
And we teased it earlier, but let's talk about the Secret Reach card. Recent sets has featured creatures that for some reason nobody notices have reach and attack their flyers right into.
Yeah, it's this one is, as we talked about, is the first red elf archer. Yeah, it's Marius Outrider. So 4 and a red for a 4/4 elf archer. It has reach. What a surprise.
It does.
It also has domains. So when it enters the battlefield, it deals damage to each opponent equal to the number of basic land types among lands you control. Pretty cool.
Yeah, this card is sick and limited. It's Lava Axe on a 4/4, and I'll take as many as I can get and just play domain stuff. There are other choices. I'll talk about one in a little bit, but this is definitely the Secret Reach card.
Yes.
Best Tongue Twister this time was Easy Man. This is inspired by our favorite Magic Tongue Twister, courtesy of our friend David Lightford Smith. Click Slither, Quick Sliver. I didn't even have to go through and say all of them three times fast this time, because I opened this at the pre-release, and it's Urborg Lurgoyf. There's just no need to discuss any others. Urborg Lurgoyf. Yeah, nope. Can't do it even twice.
I believe you.
You're not going to embarrass yourself this time?
Nope.
All right, fine. Well, let's move on to our suggestions from our listener, Camilla, who told us it might be fun to hear something like a common and uncommon and a rare you think are well-designed, exemplify the set, or excite you one way or another. Why don't you give us your common of choice?
Yeah, so we talked about it a little earlier. This is Shadow Prophecy. It's 2 and a black for a instant. And you look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of basic land types among lands you control. Put up to 2 of them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard, you lose 2 life. This is basically black dig through time. It's great.
We're going dig through grime, right?
We've decided. Dig through grime. Yes, okay. Dig through grime.
Nice. Mine is Benelish Sleeper. It's a perfect example of a modal kicker card. It is 1 and a white for a 3/1 Phyrexian Human Soldier. And has kicker for a black. When it enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, each player sacrifices a creature. So, like, sometimes you definitely want a 2-mana 3/1, and sometimes you want a Fleshbag Marauder, and this is just either or both.
I've already been gotten by it in my first draft I did of Dominaria United. It's a lot better than I thought it is. What about you? What's your uncommon of choice?
There is a very easy choice for this. It's definitely Blight Pile. It's 1 and a black for a 3/3 Phyrexian with Defender. 2 and a black and tap. Each opponent loses X life, where X is the number of creatures with Defender you control. I'm a sucker for a 2-mana 3/3 Defender anyway, especially if it's one you can make attack. This one you can't make attack, but you can still make them lose a lot of life, and people keep passing these in draft, and they should not do that. I like also it's just a big busted Phyrexian machine, kind of like drowning in a swamp. And it's like, oh, just don't go near it. If you go near it, you're going to lose X life. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I got to play with it today too, and it does a lot of work. My choice, which turned into a Twitter thread that I had to share once this was spoiled, is Yosha Declares War. I picked it mainly because I like the idea of this is just in, 75-point Futura font on like the front page of New York Times or something. Like, Yosha Declares War! Ornithopters go crazy!
The Banalish Post.
So I'm going to read this, even though I've not played with this, and I probably will never play with this. It just is really up my alley. So it's 1 and a red for a saga, and as we read ahead, which we mentioned earlier, so you can choose which chapter to start with, essentially. The first chapter is create an O2 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying named Ornithopter. Yep, create an Ornithopter. The second chapter is tapped any number of untapped artifacts you control. When you do, Yosha Declares War, deals that much damage to target creature, Planeswalker. Third chapter, up to 1 target artifact you control becomes an artifact creature with base power and toughness 4/4 until end of turn. So it's really cool. I can see it doing a lot in limited and, those cool niche artifact decks that people always try to make for standard. But yeah, it's just very flavorful. The art is absolutely gorgeous too.
Yeah, it's really cool. You know, this might be one of those things, if there are a million Power Stone tokens flying around in the next set, where that second chapter, this just becomes one in a red, kill anything. Like, yeah, this could be a thing. Who knows? Absolutely. What about a rare?
I'm going to go with the super spiky side of me. It is Leyline Binding. That is 100% my choice. I've already pre-ordered extended art versions of this. So Leyline Binding is 5 and a white for an enchantment. It has flash. It has domain where its cost is reduced for each basic land type among lands you control. You could cast this for 1 white mana, which do a lot. When it enters the battlefield, exile target non-land permanent opponent controls until Leyline Binding leaves the battlefield.
Yeah, seems very powerful. I had 2 of these in my first draft on Arena, and it was very good in my 5-color domain nonsense deck. It basically Swords to Plowshares.
Yeah, I'm already trying to figure out a different Legacy deck to play, because I figure this is busted in a lot of old formats as well. What about you?
Mine is Namada Primeval Warden. This card just screams me at all times. It is 2 black-green for a 3/4 legendary treefolk. It has reach, so this is potentially, people will forget this card has reach and attack into it. If a creature an opponent controls would die, you exile it instead. When you do, create a 1/1 green Saproling creature token. You can pay green and sacrifice a Saproling to give it +2/+2 until end of turn, or 1 and a black and sacrifice 2 Saprolings to draw a card. This does everything. It hoses your opponent's graveyard. It makes little Saproling friends. It draws cards. It can block that annoying, you know, 1/1 flyer that's pinging in. I love everything about this.
When this got spoiled, I basically said, hey, look, it's another Kalidus, except...
1,000%. Yeah. Yep. It doesn't have the lifelink, and the creatures are smaller, but it draws you cards, and I'm just very here for it. Also, just... I could gush about this card forever. It's wonderful.
Oh, it's so good. I love it, card. I love Speaking it, too. This was going to be my choice until I just went full spike. So we have 2 categories that we're going to add, because there's some interesting promo slash... additions slash cards you can open that aren't part of the regular set but are exciting enough that we want to go over them. So the first is in collector boosters, you have a chance to open a card from Legends. That's right, a card from the original old Magic expansion Legends. We're going to call these the quote-unquote lost legend cards, because the, you know, story that they were found in a warehouse is slightly believable, but we'll go with it. The second one is Wizards not only decided to bring back and include these cards from Legends, but they also redid old Legends from Legends. So there's a lot of vanilla Legends from Legends that's going to get old real quickly. They're not very good, but they're always like the, ha-ha, these are all the old vanilla Legends that people would play back in the day. And Wizards said, you know what? We're going to redo them. And you could find them in, I don't know, set boosters, I guess, or collector boosters. Don't ask me where. But you can find them when you open certain boosters.
You can find them in set boosters, a special version in collector boosters, and these are also box toppers in set booster boxes and draft booster boxes. I know this. I know this one.
I believe you.
So, Christian, which card from Legends would you want to open?
Oh, the Tabernacle of Pendril Veil, 500%.
Sure. Is that just because it's $1 billion?
Well, it's $1 billion that I would love to play in competitive mm-hmm. Magic decks, but it's $1 billion, so I'm never going to own a copy. Right. So.
Yeah, if I had to pick one to play, I would take All Hallows Eve. This is 2 black for a sorcery, and you exile it when you cast it with 2 scream counters on it. This is all erotic because the original text was insane, like a lot of old cards. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if it's exiled with a scream counter on it, you remove a scream counter from it. And then if there are no more, you put it in your graveyard, and each player returns all creature cards from their graveyard to the battlefield. And so it's like a delayed living death. I think it would be a fun thing for a couple of different cube ideas that care a lot about the graveyard. But it doesn't matter, because if I did get a collector booster and happen to open one of the 3% of them that has a card from Legends, I would 1,000% open Giant Strength, which is red for an enchantment that gives your creature +2/+2. I know this.
Oh yeah, no.
Terrible art, and it's just what would happen to me.
Yeah, no. I mean, let's be real here. I would never open a Tabernacle. I would open one of the glyphs, which were cards that in each color that dealt with walls. It was a cycle. It was terrible. Or like some random common that you're like, this was bad back in the day, and this is even worse today. So,
I'm sorry to say, I still have a number of glyphs from cracking my Legends boosties back in 94. All right. So of the updated Legends that they have called Legends Retold, which one is your favorite?
I have to go with Aisha Tanaka, Armorer. So I just like artifact decks, and I'm going to read her real quick because it doesn't seem obvious what she does, because again, her original was just a random blue-white legend back in the day. So she's 3 white and blue for a 2/4 human artificer. When Aisha Tanaka, Armorer, attacks, look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may put any number of artifact cards with mana value less than or equal to Aisha's power from among them onto the battlefield tapped. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. Aisha cannot be blocked as long as the defending player controls 3 or more artifacts.
Yeah.
She just seems cool. I don't know. Like, she seems the coolest of the ones that were printed, so.
Well, I will do you a favor, and I will read you the original Aisha Tanaka. Just for lols. A rare from Legends. She's white, blue for a 2/2 who has been eroded to be a legendary human artificer. She had banding, and you could tap her to counter an activated ability from an artifact source unless that ability's controller paid a white. Yeah. My favorite is General Marhalt Elsdragon, which is an update of Marhalt Elsdragon. It's 2 red green for a 4/4 legendary elf warrior, and it says whenever a creature you control becomes blocked, it gets +3/+3 until end of turn for each creature blocking it, which is like an old ability from Legends called Rampage. This would be Rampage 3. So the original Marhalt Elsdragon had Rampage 1. That was 3 green red red for a 4/6 legendary elf warrior with Rampage 1, which basically says when this creature becomes blocked, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each creature blocking it beyond the first. So it was like, if another creature blocked it, then it would become a 5/7. If 3 creatures blocked it, it would be a 6/8. General Marhalt Elsdragon is way better because anytime one of your creatures becomes blocked, even if it's not the first one, it's just like, yeah, I get +3/+3. Like, you can't double block anything. You kind of can't block anything.
No. Well, it's weird because you could single block stuff, but you couldn't double block things or gang block things because then the creature would grow big. It was just a weird mechanic.
Yeah. No, but I mean, the new one doesn't care about that. It's just like what? If this attacked, even if you just single block it, then it becomes a 7/7. If you double blocked it, it'd be a 10/10. Oh. There's no, with the general out, there's no blocking.
That's fair. I mean, I like no blocking. I might have thought it was still old Rampage, and I'm a little sad that they made it better, but they made it better. So yeah, I get it.
having played with Rampage back in the day, they needed to make it better. It was very real.
So Rampage, the reason I got confused is because my first experience with Rampage was in a Mirage card called Tika's Dragon. It's horrible. 9 mana for a 5/5 flyer that has trample. And if you somehow decided to block it with 2 or more creatures, it started getting +4/+4. But I thought it just got +4/+4 whenever it got blocked. So I was really excited to play it. And then I had to reread it 3 or 4 times because this was 1998. And I was only 10 or 11. So I didn't know what the hell. I didn't know what it did.
That is totally fair. Can anyone truly know what it does? Before we go, Magic tournaments are kind of coming back. Like, GPs aren't here, but people are going to various things, and you and I have decided we're going to attend a tournament.
Yes. So we're both going to be at Magic 30. We're very excited. We both are in the pretty much the same amount of events. We've signed up for all the same events. You'll see us in, we'll talk about a later episode, which events we're all going to be at, because I can't remember off the top of my head. They are. I know one's a Theros draft, so Theros sealed, right?
I can't remember which one it is. The moral of the story is we're going to both be at Magic 30 in Vegas while Worlds is happening. There's going to be a lot going on. If any of you are going to be there, our DMs on Twitter are always open. We would love to say hi and maybe sling some spells with some folks. So please drop us a note. I am super stoked to just go to some giant Magic nonsense tournament, and it's been a long time. It's time to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a warm-up event too. So in the beginning of October, there is a big Legacy tournament in Richmond, Virginia, called the Legacy Pit 2. So you'll probably get me doing a bonus episode for everyone, just talking to people at Legacy Pit, depending on who's there. So you will not be there, unfortunately, but
I will not.
I'll at least go around and ask some people some stuff and we'll get, you know, one of those cool audio, terrible audio podcasts where I ask people that their favorite cards are. So,
yeah, I 1000% hope we can do an episode in Vegas. It will be a little bit of a challenge because we'll all be masked, but we'll just hold our microphone / phone very close to the people we're interviewing and see what's on the minds and what cards people are thinking about of people at these physical tournaments.
Stoked. Yeah, it's exciting.
Let's go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us today. You can find us on Twitter at our handle at MemoryJarMTG. We would love your feedback. And as always, please tell us what cards you want to remember. And remember to check out the Magic Card Dictionary and suggest some more things we can add to it. We've had some great suggestions from our listeners thus far.
And we got to add Dodecapod, so we'll figure that out. Again, special thanks to Chris Yates for the logo. We greatly appreciate it. You can find Chris on Twitter at CMY Company. That's company with a K. And until next time, you know, dig into your past a little bit. See what you can change a little or what you want to make different. But otherwise, we look forward to playing Magic with you all and talk to you soon.